You're listening to Streaming Justice, a youth-led discussion on civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. This is Marinos Tiv. I'm 17 years old and a junior at North Allegheny High School.
Hi, I'm Julia Maruca. I'm 16 years old and I'm also a junior at North Allegheny.
Hello, my name is Abraham Richardson. I am 16 years old and a junior from Woodland Hills High School.
I'm Sheed Ansari. I'm 17 years old, a junior at Propel Robotic Hills High School. What I would like to start on is recognize the progress that was made during the civil rights movement and recognize that we still have to make progress in certain areas, like gay rights.
Definitely. The thing about political stuff like this is that it's all intersectional. You can't talk about feminism without recognizing that there's different types of women. You can't talk about race relations without talking about like the different types of people in each sort of group. So it definitely makes sense that we talk about those things in conjunction with one another.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting how like every generation has sort of different social issues that are very prevalent to their culture. Like Martin Luther King, obviously, it was racial equality, which we are still struggling with, unfortunately. But now we also are leaning towards women's rights and gay rights and all those good stuff.
Well, it could be a good and a bad thing. The bad thing is there will always be an issue that we have to address. But the good thing is there's always somebody that will, you know, take the lead and be the voice of a people that are not being spoken for.
Mm-hmm. And I think something that's good about this intersectional thing is that nowadays that we're recognizing that all these things are connected shows that we've kind of made some progress.
I agree.
One of the specifics we can get into is the specifics of the civil rights movement. Do you think that Martin Luther King took the right stance and nonviolent approach? I'll start with you, Abraham. You think it was the right thing to do to hippie it out?
Yeah, I think that is the right thing to do. Especially today, we need more leaders that will come out and, you know, help to speak against what's wrong and what's right. Because today we're lacking when it comes to stuff like that. I mean, the generation that we're in today, it's bad. I mean,
we can't ignore that there's a lot of problems going on, but. So, and I mean, when we watch the news and stuff, it tends to show that there's a lot of backlash and bad things and violence and brutality going on. And a lot of times it doesn't really emphasize that there has been some progress made. So what about you guys? What sort of examples of good activism have you seen in your community?
I would say my father. We were in the community once and my dad spoke out against certain things. He'll will like give food and stuff to the neighbors who don't really have enough money to feed their child. My dad ran for certain positions as a mayor and stuff, and like with me and my family, we want to be at a certain level to where we want to help people who don't help themselves, who are not able to help themselves. I guess people today, they're struggling to fight for themselves, but you know, at the end of the day, we need more who will come out for those, you know.
Yeah, and I think those like little guys who do little things every single day to help each other out are the ones who make the big difference. Not one person can fuel a whole movement to fix every problem. We all need to work together. And I think something that's really makes me feel really good is when I see kids in my school even doing little things to help each other. That just shows that we're making progress and we're starting to go past all these things that have been barriers in the past that have held us back.
An example that I've seen in the community or in regular life is I go to Propel and there are certain students that are outcasted or not even liked because of their sexual orientation. So some people may see it as like, well, these guys are different than us, but there's other people, like normal friends, that just walk up to them and treat them as individuals, not as what they like or what they see themselves as.
And our school has a GSA, too. So, I mean, I think there's definitely And people, I mean, in classes, we seem to be more open to talking about social issues. Like, we'll bring up stuff. We talk about current events in my AP U.S. History class. And in my school, Murnaz can vouch for this, but we have a branch of Key Club, too, which is focused on encouraging kids to do volunteer work, like volunteering at soup kitchens and that sort of thing. And using something that would look good on a college application is sort of an incentive to encourage people to do that. And some people may say that incentives like that are not the best idea, but I think if it gets people out there doing good things for the world, it's a good idea. What do you guys think about kind of incentives that get people moving?
I don't see it as a bad thing personally. Going back to our GSA at our school, our Gay Straight Alliance, this year especially, we saw a lot more kids joining. It used to be maybe 2 or 3 kids at most. Now we're in like 15, 20 kids, which is awesome. And when we're making the flyers and stuff for people to come to our meetings, we're saying like, oh, there'll be pizza, there'll be ice cream. And I mean, sure, you can see that as like, oh, we're bribing them. But I think the general message of what we are advocating is bigger than that.
Yeah, incentives are good as long as they have a good reason behind them. Like, come for pizza, but learn about this opportunity to bridge the gap between two people that are divided.
Everybody likes pizza, so I think that's a good idea, no matter the situation.
To me, I think every little helps. Like the Gay Straight Alliance and the little small groups that are in schools now who are fighting against these certain things that is here today. You know, I think every little helps. Words, music, not talking about the bad music who is like disrespecting certain things, but like positive messaging and certain things. So
I have a question. Do you think that music plays a positive or negative effect on issues?
I mean, music, it plays both roles. I mean, it does disrespect and it does respect. I mean, you know, you hear music out here these days that, you know, that talks badly about women and about drugs and the community and how much money you can make. And also there's music out there that will talk about these things as Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and so much other positive leaders who try to fight for civil rights. So
I think it really just depends on the song. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, a youth-led discussion on civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. King, with our hosts, Murnaz, Shahid, Abraham, and me, Julia. So Murnaz, I understand you had a point you want to bring up?
Yeah, we were just talking about music and how it's culturally making a big impact, good or bad, on how social issues are handled. And tying in with that, I think now is the age of technology, the age of internet, and I think that has a very new impact to how we stream our voices and our opinions. And it's sort of ending the whole isolated community thing. Now we have the opportunity to speak and share our voices to anyone. So what do you guys think? Do you think this is a good thing or a bad thing? Is there a backlash to being able to pretty much say whatever you want?
Of course there's a backlash. And like some issues, like the Eric Garner case, that got out so quickly and spread so fast that there was the people that protested and rioting and all this other stuff. So you see like the spreading of information is so fast that it's hard to contain it. And this is what we really want people to hear, not a whole bunch of people yelling about all these other different things.
I think it's really changed the way that social justice and social advocacy groups spread messages and decide on what messages because they're going to spread, because they don't really decide anymore. It's all these individual little voices instead of one big, like, mass statement.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's no really Malcolm X's or Martin Luther King's anymore, because there's just more websites mm-hmm. or movements or hashtags that are trending. There's no voice to speak. There's no message. Some person standing up here like, this is my message. I want everybody to come together peacefully. There's just an issue, a Black Lives Matter hashtag, and everybody's just jumping on it.
And then you have people, like individual leaders, like Abraham, you were talking about your dad and about the good things that he's done for his community. And I think those are the real heroes of today, the individual little leaders that do little things that mean a lot for their communities.
Yeah, and I think, like Shahid was saying, how anyone has a voice and there's no one person and how it does spread so quickly. Unfortunately, I find that that also can lead to misconceptions and people stereotyping, like teenagers especially, teenagers who share their voice a lot on the internet and really speak their opinions. There's this stereotype that no one takes them seriously, no one pays attention to them. And do you guys think that these teenagers do make an impact, or they are just saying what they want because they can?
I mean, some teenagers might come out and make an impact, but they're making the wrong impact at the same time, especially in the media today. You know, they just say whatever they want.
Most of the time when you see teenagers on like CNN or something, they're only there to prove a point. Like, I've seen one episode, like they had a teenager activist and they only had him there to say, well, this, why are you so mad? Why are you angry? Why are you mad, bro? And they tried to make him seem, as if he was just an angry teenager, like he didn't have a point. So I think we have to be conscious of what other people think about us.
We have to consider that the media has a lot of control over how these issues are presented. Because if they, like Shahid said, when there's a teenager on TV and they edit it or they cut it or they frame it in some sort of way that makes it seem like they don't know what they're talking about, they just want to rant in public, that changes the public's opinion. And I think the last group of hosts talked about this too, but if we're going to consider what stereotypes are, you have to look at what the media is how the media is promoting these stereotypes.
Agreed.
I also have like a certain things because I am part of that stereotype, because I have no idea what happened to Sandra Bland, and I really don't know. And I was mad about it. I was upset that she died. But then again, I'm over here and I look back on it like I didn't know the facts. I don't know what happened, but I was mad about it because it was everywhere. And then so mm-hmm. I am playing into it. But then again, you know what I'm saying? I don't try to.
Yeah, it's very easy to be manipulated. And if you hear someone you respect say something, I think now, if that's the only voice you're listening to, then that's what you're also going to believe. So I think in this age of information, we really need to look at every side of the story and not just one side. And news stations, especially nowadays, mm-hmm. they are very stereotyped and often lean towards left or right or whatever for what they believe in. And if you only listen to one, I think you're just hurting yourself, because that's just ignorance, and you need to keep in mind everyone's opinions and everyone's side of the story.
The thing about there being such a wide access range on the internet is that it's possible to hear almost every single side of the story, because everyone who has any sort of connection to an issue can speak their mind on it. And if you look hard enough, you can find any point of view. And even though there are like sort of news stations for every political leaning, that means that it's laid out for you. You can, if you want to see a more conservative side, if you want to see a more liberal side, if you want to see a side that's in the middle, you can go, you can find the station for that.
Mm-hmm. But then again, you have to find the right story, because I'm part of the opportunity where I just listen to one source and I got that one story. But then I go listen to the case. I listen to the case file, and I'm like, well, there's four different stories, and I don't know which one is the right one. So there are different viewpoints out there, but you have to go all around them, collect all the information that you can, and decide on your own what the right story is.
Mm. And I think that's just the work that anybody has to do if they want to be actively engaged in discussion about social issues while being educated about them. Because a lot of people also I'll see people on the internet who, whether intentionally or accidentally, they spread misinformation about things. Right. And it's hard to filter for that, especially since a lot of people, if you're scrolling down Tumblr or Instagram or something like that, you see something and you just think, oh my gosh, that's terrible. Mm-hmm. And you don't always immediately go, all right, I'm going to source check this. I'm going to make sure this is specifically correct.
Right, right.
I was at the bus stop today on my way here, and there was a guy that came next to me and my mother. And since we're, you know, talking about ignorance and, you know, we were at the bus stop and he came, and we thought he'll seem like a nice gentleman, but out of his mouth, he said, I don't care about Martin Luther King Day. And, you know, this man, of course, he was Caucasian. And for you to say that around African-Americans is going to throw off a vibe to where we're not going to like what you say. Like, today, if you have comments on certain things like this, or just keep it to yourself. But, like, for you to come out, for him to come out of pocket and say things like that, and then when my mom told him that's something you should have kept to yourself, and he said that, you know, that he was right. So,
Well, then, you have to take into consideration, was he being racist or anti-racist? Because he could be literally just stating his fact, like, I don't care about Martin Luther King today, but was he necessarily trying to offend you?
I mean, he's standing next to us, you know, saying that. I'm guessing he is trying to get our attention on how we are going to react to what he said.
Well, I don't think he should have said that in front of anyone, like, no matter if he was saying to it a white person or a black person. But personally, I think where that might be coming from, right now we live in a period and in a country where we're not surrounded by, like, there's no war in our country. We don't see violence in our community as much as, say, when Martin Luther King Jr. was advocating what he was. Every day, kids were getting shot in the streets, and it was such a bigger priority back then. I'm not saying it's not a priority now, obviously, but I feel like we're not surrounded by it as much, so we feel isolated and we don't understand.
Martin Luther King was a great man. Started as a child with great big dreams. He found words that changed people's lives. Said we could live together and we could be friends.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, a youth-led discussion on civil rights, past, present, and future in honor of Dr. King. This is Mehrnaz, Julia, Shahid, and Abraham.
How do you think that education system can better build a community?
Well, I think that if we're talking about the education system in the context of race relations, something we definitely have to bring up is funding. Now, personally, I'm not a huge expert on this topic. Do any of you guys have, like, specific points of view you want to bring up?
You should bring up that schools should try to be unbiased in whatever they present, because I go to a predominantly black school and I have predominantly white teachers. However, my teachers, their viewpoints are completely unbiased, racist, and they're completely real with each other. Like, hey, I think that this can be looked at both ways. They'll play the devil's advocate if they have to, and they can present a topic to really make sure you're educated and not, you know what I'm saying? So you got to make sure they're unbiased.
The thing about that is there was recently some controversy in some of this, I think it was somewhere in the South, about censoring history textbooks and talking about whether we should sort of sugarcoat the history of the United States when talking about big issues and big mistakes in the past, like slavery and things like that. And if we're going to try to build a community of, like, racial tolerance and acceptance in our schools, we can't be censoring things like that. We need to be able to look at things with open eyes and with, like, a real point of view with all the facts in front of us if we're going to build our own opinions.
I completely agree. Like, in my opinion, if you want to, like, shade history in a light that's just making America sound so great, that's just exploiting exceptionalism and not pointing. Yes, we have had flaws, obviously. We have done things in history that have not been right, and we need to accept that those happen. You can't deny that these things didn't happen. But what we do need to do is work to make them, A, not repeat themselves, obviously, and B, talk about them so that these issues aren't, like, prevalent in schools in a lighter manner.
Right. Like, and most issues, if you present it in the right way and you build it up, that they will not be an issue later in life. Like, I have Russian friends, and when I listen about the Cold War, I don't lose them or get mad at them or start throwing shade. No, I just see that there's a certain point in history that we were beefing or weren't getting along, but that doesn't matter now because I'm cool with you.
Mm-hmm.
I can sometimes it could be easier to like try to sugarcoat history, like the Columbus. Mm-hmm. People are like,
definitely.
Yeah, Columbus. People might say, well, he's this great hero. He has the holiday and everything. But then you don't really get into the actions and the reactions that happen in his discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, recently, especially in this year, there was some changing of Columbus Day in some cities to, I believe it's Indigenous Peoples Day. Correct me if I'm wrong. And I think that's a really honorable thing to do because it's recognizing that there was a sort of covering of history that happened there where people thought that where people were being told that, oh, this man was super great. He did all these great things. And then really he was abusing people. He was enslaving people. And that's not really something that we should celebrate, especially not on a like on a holiday basis. So I think what those cities did and was pretty honorable.
I agree. And I think that one of the reasons why we see a change in like how we see these so-called heroes like Columbus and things in American history is because of this information age where we learn about the other side. Like when we were kids and we learned about Columbus, we didn't really think about or even been taught about the Native Americans who have been here for centuries. They are the real Americans, and we seem to never really teach that to kids. But now that we are in a period where we can learn about these things on our own, read about them, hear actual Native Americans speaking about it themselves, that gives a lot more respect to these people and these cultures.
And the best thing to do that is admitting, well, we did this wrong. Let's try to fix it. Even though they did glorify Columbus and all his non-glory things, mm-hmm. they tried to fix it. They said, hey, we're going to take back your holidays. We're going to give back to the situation which you actually did. So as long as we're making progress, it doesn't really matter.
And when we're on the topic of sort of the, like, idealizing of history, that's something that we have to talk about when we're thinking about that sort of thing is that there's a phenomenon in which white people, like myself, end up talking over others who may be more qualified to talk on a topic. And something that we got to bring up is that was what we talked about before, that non-racism versus anti-racism thing. MZ is more the expert on this.
Well, I heard this man, Marlon James from The Guardian, he made a short video about the difference between non-racist and anti-racist and how we as a society don't really understand these very differing sides to the topic. So non-racist pretty much explains that you as a person, you're not racist, you don't practice racism, you don't try and be prejudiced towards different races, so therefore, you're fine with it. Like, you can sleep at night because you know you, yourself, you're not racist. On the other hand, anti-racist is when you actually do something about it. Yeah, you recognize these things exist, and you also do something in order to change it. If you're just non-racist, which a majority of us as Americans are, that is not changing anything. Yes, you need to recognize that these are problems, but you shouldn't be able to just accept it. You need to people in general, Americans, need to understand that just sitting there, not doing anything, isn't going to solve the problem, just as wearing a pink bandana isn't going to cure breast cancer. You need to actually make a stance, do something about it, volunteer, help these people in order to actually make a change.
Well, I'm gonna play the devil's advocate really quickly. And non-racist, well, some people may argue, well, the problem is race relations, so the only way to solve that is just being fine with everything. Everything is fine. I can have some black friends, I can have some white friends, as long as I'm not being racist, what's the big deal?
That sort of plays into the kind of prevalent myth that it's a good idea to be colorblind. And what that means is that looking at people completely the same, no matter whether they're black or white or whatever race they are. Thing is, being colorblind isn't really possible because we just aren't. No matter how not racist you think you are, you're still going to think something when you see somebody who just without even realizing it.
Right, right.
So you have to realize that and own that and realize that you can do good things with that. Like, you can let people talk when they're more qualified to talk about something than you. You can try not to talk over people. You can listen to people because they have really good ideas about something that you might not have even thought of before.
And also going back to what Shahid said about like, oh, it's not affecting me, so I don't really need to do anything about it. People also need to understand racism isn't just a problem going on in America, where we have the opportunity to speak our minds and do something about it. There are other countries all over the world where race is such a huge problem, and not only race, but every social issue. So just not doing something here, you need to do something because not many people have this opportunity.
We just got a tweet from @HXDelante. What do you say to those who claim problems with culture appropriations are bogus because their ideas aren't property?
So cultural appropriation is a big issue that has become kind of a buzzword right now. There's this idea of you shouldn't steal somebody's culture. But it seems like Shahid has something he wants to say about it.
Well, not necessarily, but, I do think that, you know, some ideas, they could be open and not necessarily claiming to one person or type of people.
Abraham, about like, does cultural appropriation actually happen?
Like, what's your opinion on it?
Well, if that's it, then we can go back to the non-racist, anti-racist, and I had a point. You said you can't be colorblind, but I had a question. Is having a preference being racist?
It depends. What do you mean by a preference? Do you mean, like, in relationships or what?
In life. If I get on, okay, this is going to be racist, but if I get on a bus and I see a majority of black people in the back, I'm going to sit in the back. Or if I go to a school and I see 3 or 4 black people, I'm going to hang out with them. Is that me being preferenceable or is that me being racist?
I mean, in that situation, that's something, your race and your culture is something that you have in common with those people. And it's kind of a touchy thing to think about because there is kind of a double standard. Because, I mean, if it's me and I see a bunch of white people hanging out and I immediately go hang out with them, that's different. So it's kind of, I'm not really sure what my opinion on that is. What about you, MZ?
I think that also ties in with the whole reverse racism thing, how if you're black and you say, I hate, like, people will ask, why can black people say, I hate white people, but white people can't say, I hate black people? Well, white people weren't oppressed for thousands of years. I think if you have a preference, and I think that's a lot to do with culture. I don't think that's necessarily like a race, like, preference. You're not like, oh, they're black. You're like, oh, I can, like, identify with these people and have things in common. So I think that's the bigger answer.
That's a really good point. And we'll make sure to get back to that after we take this short break. We'll be back with more Streaming Justice after this on Youth Express.
When the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day. When the war.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, a youth-led discussion on civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. King, with Mirnaz, Shahid, and Abraham, and Juliet. That's me. So last time, we had a question from @historicaldilettante about cultural appropriation and whether you think that's a real thing or not. And just to provide some background, cultural appropriation is the idea that somebody can sort of misuse a piece of somebody's culture. For instance, somebody dressing up in a Native American headdress while not actually being Native American, or wearing a stereotypically Mexican costume at Halloween. And a lot of people think that that's not right, that you shouldn't use someone's culture as a costume. So what do you guys think about that?
I think it depends on where you're from and where you're at, because I know a lot of white people that are from the same neighborhood as me, the same music as me, and they might be approached or seen as, well, they're acting black, or I've known them since third grade, and they're as good or as gangster as me, and it's nothing to do with their race or their preference. It's just that's where they're raised at. My father lived in San Diego and was surrounded by people Latino culture, and he loved listening to, what does he call it? I forget, but it's just Mexican music and rolling around in Spanish, and I have no idea what they're saying, but he's jamming to it, and he's not being insensitive or anything. That's where he was raised, in San Diego.
Well, I think a big thing about cultural appropriation is, like, when you are not surrounded by these cultures and you know nothing about it and you're being sort of ignorant, I think that's where the problem arises. Like, yeah, if you are white and you live in a stereotypical black community, I don't think you know what they stand for, and you're pretty much part of their community, regardless of race. But I think the problem is whenever you are a white person and on Halloween you just wear like a Native American costume stereotypically, you don't understand what they mean and what how each piece of their outfits and their headdresses symbolize something, and they mean something very important to the Native American culture. And a lot of people just simply don't know this. They don't understand. They don't understand that each bead means something to these people. Each color represents something. And I think that's where the problem is. They're not respecting the other culture.
A lot of the discourse about cultural appropriation has to do with the idea of sharing culture versus stealing culture. Now, what Shahid was talking about before with people in his neighborhood being into some of the aspects of more black culture, that seems like it's more of a sharing thing, because both sides of the culture thing are okay with it, and they're obviously not using it for any malicious purpose. But like what MZ said about the like the costumes and stuff being sort of misused, that you don't have they don't have the perspective, they don't have the education to really use that in the proper situation.
A wise man once said, I'm joking, his name was Exhibit, the rapper. It was an MTV interview, and they're asking about Eminem. He said, how do you feel about Eminem? And he says, as long as he respects it, I can dig it. So as long as you respect my culture, I don't care. As long as you're not, like, making a satirical mock, or, you know what I'm saying, not being sensitive to really what I stand for and what I can be doing. So, like, people who are, you know, do fake rap videos or something, that's, it can be funny to some people, but they'd be like, hey, that's racist. So if you can respect it, then I can dig it.
And you gotta understand the boundaries that are within certain communities. For instance, I mean, in no situation is it really ever okay for a white person to say the N-word. Mm-hmm. And people know that. That's a widely known fact. And if you know that, then why would you sort of break that cultural thing? It's a cultural sort of taboo like any other thing.
I agree. Same with like blackface. Like, you know, that's coming from a hateful place. So when you do things like that, it's for the sole purpose to be offensive and mean.
What about whiteface? You ever watched White Chicks?
Yeah.
Is that racism, or is that reverse racism?
Reverse racism is kind of a touchy topic, and it's the idea of reverse racism would be that white people can be oppressed, with finger quotes here, in the same way that black people can. And some people defend it by saying this things like, well, if there's a black entertainment network, why isn't there a white entertainment network? Or if there's a Black History Month, then why isn't there a White History Month? Well, the thing is, every month is White History Month, unfortunately. Our culture is kind of rooted in a place of whiteness, and that's the sort of, unfortunately, the base on which everything else seems to be built. So somebody want to say something else about that?
Well, I don't believe in reverse racism. I mean,
me neither.
Me neither.
I don't see reverse racism as like a thing, because some people would be like, there's a blackpeoplemeet.com, and then whitepeoplemeet.com came out, and then that was seen as an issue. Or I was seen as, if you have a preference to white people and you want to search, do that, then go ahead. That's all fine by you. If you want to have a preference not being racism, then yeah, you can do that.
Well, the thing, like going back to what Julia said, like our world, our society is white. We see in white. Like in the entertainment industry, there's so much backlash on like Oscars and other mm-hmm. Academy Awards about like, oh, black people are underrepresented. And I think that is genuinely an issue because we don't really see many movies where there is a specific culture being represented if it's not in a stereotypical sense.
That's a great point.